Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the Anlaw Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lowther, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The Anlaw Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another great episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm your host, Adam Lowther, and today we have a prescient guest. We have great guests always, but now it's prescient. Lieutenant General retired Imbom Chun of the Republic of Korea Army. He was his last job on active duty was as the commander of Korea's Special Forces Command, and then now he's one of the leading thinkers in South Korea, and he writes widely. He's written for Global Security Review, and he writes in a number of other periodicals in the U.S. and in South Korea, and he's always got prescient thoughts. And I asked General Chun to come on because he had written an article for me that discussing President Yoon's martial law declaration, and that's now been about a week ago. And so we thought, there's been a lot that's happened over the last week, and we thought, who better to come on and talk about what's going on in South Korea than Imbom Chun. Well, with that, welcome to NucleCast.
Thank you again for the invitation.
So can you walk us through what happened originally and then what's subsequently happened in response?
On 3 December, about 20 minutes past 10 o'clock in the evening, President Yoon suddenly said that he was going to have a speech. Most people thought it was going to be about the economic hardships that we're facing. Suddenly, that talk, which did not garner that much interest, became a declaration of martial law. And I was watching, I had turned on the current news channel, and I was watching this, and initially I thought it was just fake news, or wished it was fake news. And President Yoon declared martial law. And the reason that he gave was that he felt that the National Assembly was a den of criminals. And den of criminals is paraphrased. And the reason that he believed that the National Assembly is a den of criminals is because the National Assembly was occupied by the opposition. They had the majority. And with this majority for the past 6 months, this National Assembly has been trying to pass unilateral laws that he had to veto, and most of these laws was to hold special hearings regarding him or his associates, mainly to embarrass Yoon and to somehow impeach him. The latest impeachment attempt is to impeach the prosecutors who are trying to investigate illegal activities of the head of the opposition leader. And in fact, with this chaos that arrived about 10 days ago, the first thing they did was pass this impeachment law. And of course, President Yoon is now having to veto that as well. And he couldn't because he was in this chaos situation. The total number of these kinds of unilateral passing of law or attempts at impeachment was 24 during the past 6 months. So the opposition has been really at it. It finally culminated in the opposition's attempt to unilaterally pass next year's budget. This has never happened in Korean history. Even during the worst of dictatorships, the ruling party and the opposition always agreed to pass a bipartisan budget. But this time they said, nope, we're going to just do it. And one of the things they did was they got rid of all the discretionary budgeting for various government agencies. So included in this discretionary budget is not only the budget that the presidential office could use, but even the police and intelligence services. So in case of the police, when you're on a stakeout, you use this money to catch narcotics dealers or, you know, things that you would require long-time surveillance. So it's just unfathomable how they're using their powers for not the right reasons. So that's why my president called them a den of criminals. But then the president made this fantastic move where, in order to solve a political problem, he used a military solution, which is something that is just unthinkable. Now, the reason that we have martial law in Korea is because we have the North Koreans always trying to invade and communize South Korea. If something like that happens, we need to mobilize our nation. And when you try to mobilize a nation, you need to do it really fast because Korea is not that big. And in order to do that, you need extraordinary authority. And that's where martial law comes in, where you get that kind of authority. So it's martial law is required, and its use is for that kind of emergency situation, not for a deadlock at the National Assembly. And another thing is, how the hell did we get into this deadlock? How the hell did the opposition get the majority votes? Well, it was Yoon and his administration's ineptitude for the past 2 years. I mean, Yoon has done some really great things with the relationship with the United States and neighboring Japan. I really support that. And personally, he and his administration has passed a law illegalizing the eating of dog meat. So I'm just, you know, way happy with those things. But he has also done some really, really, really stupid things, like being unable to anticipate the failure to secure the Busan Expo, or the fiasco that we had with the Boy Scouts event in Korea. It was a fiasco. So because of those things and other things, the people voted against him. Now, I say voted against him because that's what happened exactly. We did not vote for the opposition. We voted against him to give him a warning, hey, you need to, you know, be a better president. And instead, I think he took it personally. So he declares martial law. And then this all happens. It ends within 6 hours. The National Assembly repealed it and so forth. Things are coming out every day now. The opposition is thinking that this is a great opportunity to impeach him. They have like 70% of the Korean public behind them, but there is still 10 to 15% of the Korean public who believe Yoon was correct in what he did, that they feel that the opposition are a bunch of commies, that they can't be reasoned with, And rather than being read, the martial law was probably better, and they feel that too bad Yoon didn't succeed. So that's the wide divide we have here in Korea right now. People are demonstrating against Yoon and for Yoon. About 150,000 to even more people are demonstrating for his impeachment, while about 20,000, 30,000, which is still a significant number, are demonstrating to support Mr. Yoon. For the past 10 years, there's been no violence involved with demonstrations, and hopefully that'll continue. But there's always the chance that any element, anti-social, anti-Republic of Korea, could get in and make the situation worse. So that's the perils that we have. The first impeachment vote was not passed because the opposition voted against it. So, the ruling party voted against it. So the opposition has about 192 votes. They need 200. They need 8. And last time, they were only able to get 3. As of this morning, the ruling party members have openly said that 7 of them are going to agree to impeachment. So they're only one person away, and it's going to happen one way or another. So the next vote is going to be on the 14th of December, which is going to be the evening or of the 13th of December in the United States. So either Yoon will be impeached then, or it's going to happen sooner or later, because again, just a couple of hours ago, about 10 hours ago, Yoon gave a speech about why he did it. It sounded like he was talking to his 10% and not to the other 90% of the Korean people. So he's going to fight the impeachment. He's going to fight. He's not going to resign. That he made clear, because he feels he did not do wrong. So that's where we are politically. Another thing is the involvement of the military. So the soldiers knew nothing of what their mission was. In fact, a lot of them, when they arrived by helicopter to the National Assembly, said, "Why the hell am I here?" Because they thought there was an emergency against a North Korean activity. The commanders seems to have known about this maybe a day or two before, some of them, especially the commander of the special forces. And he wavered. And because he wavered, and because the troops had very little knowledge, they did not know what to do. They fumbled. But at the same time, they knew not to hurt the civilians. And so the civilians, which there were a lot of them, the soldiers were outnumbered at least 3-1, 4-1. Were attacking the soldiers with fire extinguishers, throwing stuff, pulling at their rifles. And these soldiers, these special forces, they're not just special forces. They're the elite of the special forces. They could have beat the hell out of the civilians, but yet they showed great restraint, and they're being applauded for that. But the leadership of the ROK military, whether they were fooled or whether they knew it, I guess, you know, they have their own things to say. But what's happening is they're going out of the chain of command and revealing and exposing what their orders were. And this is really bad for morale and a bad example to soldiers, saying, okay, it's one thing not to follow, you know, the illegal commands, but it's another thing to just disregard the chain of command. And so there's going to be a moral discussion about what is right and wrong in these kind of situations.
So in South Korea, is the process similar to that in the United States where, you know, we have the House of Representatives impeaches, and then once a president or another federal employee is impeached, they then have to be convicted by the Senate. So if President Yoon is impeached, does he then have a trial in the assembly, or is impeachment removal?
Okay. Yes. So unlike the United States, if impeachment is passed, then it goes to the Constitutional Court. At the Constitutional Court, the Constitutional Court has 90 days maximum to come up with a verdict. So there have been two previous circumstances where the Korean president was impeached. Once was with Noh Mi-hyun. That verdict came out about at the 60-day mark. And then, of course, there was the impeachment of Park Geun-hye in 2016-17, that time frame. It took them exactly 90 days, and they did impeach the president. Once the president is impeached and it becomes final at the constitutional courts, the Koreans have 60 days to vote on a new president. So that's how the process works.
Okay, yeah, that's quite a bit different. Well, we're now at that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. So we'll be right back. This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Ann Law Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence. And we're back, and we're talking to Lieutenant General retired Im Bum Chun. We're talking about what's going on in Korea right now, and you very nicely laid out exactly what happened, and you know this impeachment process and sort of what's going on. As you look to the days, weeks, months ahead, what are the things that you think might happen, and you know, what do you fear? What do you hope happens? How are you looking at the near-term and long-term future?
So best case is impeachment is passed and the Korean president accepts this verdict and waits it out like all the previous Korean presidents. And he'll stay quiet for whatever period that the constitutional courts will take its time to make the final verdict. It looks like President Yoon is quite confident that even if he is impeached at the National Assembly, that he has done nothing wrong legally, and therefore the constitutional courts will uphold his position. And if that happens, we will have a situation that will bring more of the opposition trying to use their numbers to destroy and hurt President Yoon. A worst case it would be impeachment, because impeachment is going to happen sooner or later. It just is unimaginable for me to think that impeachment, the bill will not be passed by the National Assembly. I mean, it just got to happen. So just assuming that the impeachment bill will be passed by the National Assembly, it goes to the constitutional courts, and Yoon fights it during the 60 days or 90 days, trying to rally his 10%. And of course, the people will be in the streets during this time, and people can get excited, and or North Korea, they have their sympathizers and their agents down here in South Korea And there's a likelihood that they will be given orders to instigate violence. And you know how these demonstrations can get very emotional. And if it becomes violent, then we would really have a reason to declare martial law. All of this is happening when the world economy is struggling. The United States, the new administration, is planning on tariffs, which is going to hurt a country like Korea, which relies heavily on trade. If Mr. Trump goes on with all of the tariffs that he has been mentioning, we're going to lose about a quarter of our growth potential with those tariffs. So in this environment that we have of a world in economy that's not doing well, and then a United States using tariffs that might actually hurt its own allies, and then this internal confusion is not good for us. So I'm hoping that Mr. Yoon will follow the process. Hopefully he will, you know, be measured in his actions and his words, and let the democratic process proceed. But the most important thing is for the opposition to unite. The opposition has about one third of the National Assembly seats. But if they are able to unite, it doesn't mean that Yoon's impeachment will automatically result in the opposition coming back to power as the reigning government in Korea. Because the opposition, the so-called Democratic Party, has lost a lot of credibility the last time they had it. Why do you think we voted for a guy like Yoon? You know? So anyway, if the ruling party, the PPP, the People Power Party, if they can unite with one candidate, then we have a chance. Unfortunately, I can't guarantee that the PPP will unite, because they're a bunch of politicians and they're more selfish and stupid than patriotic and doing what they should be doing, which is looking after the people.
So this is obviously symptomatic of larger problems in South Korea. Could you maybe, for many of our listeners who are unfamiliar with sort of the state of play in South Korea, could you maybe give us a lay down of what politics and Korean society look like, and the divisions, and who's on what side, and what are the major parties advocating?
So you have to go back to the very beginning of the Republic of Korea. The Republic of Korea was established in 1948, 3 years after we were liberated from the Japanese by the United States. The United States came to South Korea, and the Soviets came to North Korea, and the Soviets knew exactly what they wanted. They wanted a communist state. They were very systematic in establishing that. In South Korea, we had to guarantee human rights and freedom of press, all those things. But you have to remember what South Korea looked like during that time. South Korea was a poor, poor, poor country. 80% of the people could not read or write. They had a reason why they called it the Hermit Kingdom, because, you know, we were a bunch of hermits. Now, these South Koreans, these ignorant South Koreans, they were under Japanese colonial rule for 35 years. And the Japanese were not kind to the Koreans. So if you were a young man in the 1920s, it had already been 15, 20 years since Japan had ruled Korea, and they treated you like an animal. You knew that Japan was a capitalist country and that it was an imperialist country. So you thought to yourself, imperialism and capitalism are bad words. And then you heard in a far, far country called Rossowa, which is Russia, that communism had come and now everyone was free and equal. Do you think you might have been a communist without knowing what the consequences of that is and how fake communism is? So in 1945, a lot of South Koreans thought that they were communists. And when the United States came with democracy and freedom and all that, but more importantly, Christianity, Christian faith came to South Korea with Lee Seung-man, a person who had been living in the United States fighting for Korean independence, came, and with the support of the United States, he became the ruling president, the first president of South Korea. So now you have a situation where a lot of the educated Koreans considered themselves as communist or socialist and who were opposing a US-backed minority of democratic capitalist people. And there was a lot of strife in South Korea. What I'm trying to say is, from the very beginning, there was a lot of internal fighting in South Korea. And it culminated in a major war instigated by the North Koreans. And there was a lot of killing. By the end of the Korean War, 10% of the Korean people were killed, and Koreans killed each other. And at the end of the war, there was still a lot of bad sentiment in South Korea. And until the 70s and early 80s, North Korea actually had a better life standard than the South Koreans. And so many people argued that, you know, South Korea, the so-called democracy, is a dictatorship with lower living standards. And the North Koreans is a so-called communism, and they have better living conditions. And so there was a lot of ideological strife there. But now capitalism has won. And you would think that these communists, these socialist-leaning people, whose families were killed or murdered or executed during the Korean War and before the Korean War, they identify themselves not as communists, but as people, I think, they call themselves, you know, progressives and leftists, but they find their roots from those years. And so there's this great divide in my society. And the only thing that prevented violence is because of the way that South Korea has been able to unite in the goal of having a better standard of living. And so that's what united us. It resulted in South Korea being way better, living better than the North Koreans. And but still, that divide exists. And because of this divide, the liberals and the conservatives just can't mix. And then, of course, you have the ultra right and you have the ultra left, and they're both crazy. And so, does this all sound familiar to you? So we're in a very difficult political situation here, which will only be resolved with time and the realization of everyone that we need to look at the goal, the mutual goal of every Korean, which is to live in peace. And of course, these ultra-right, ultra-left, they're in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. So hopefully when they die off, it'll be better.
Now we're at that time in the show where I like to bring out Bob the Genie. And as I rub my magic lamp, Bob, of course, grants three wishes to all of our guests. Now those three wishes have to be related to the topics we've been discussing. So no great wealth or no fountain of youth, but, you know, related to our topics. So with three wishes from Bob the Genie, let me ask you, General Chun, what is your first wish?
My first wish would be that the National Assembly would wake up and start looking at the people rather than their own self-interest, and realize even their own self-interest should begin with the welfare of the people. My second wish is that the United States will have patience with what's happening in South Korea and look at us with leniency and help us out in this very critical time, because you don't want a faltering South Korea. We are your best ally in this region, for sure. And it's not just because we're nice guys. We survive because of the United States. It's in our best interest. So help us out. My third wish is that Merry Christmas to all the Americans. We owe a great deal to the American people. And it's not as bad as you think. So come visit us. The more that you do, we'll reassure the Korean people of your friendship and trust. And this is a friend in need is a friend indeed. I mean, you know, we need you guys ever more than ever before. And one of the things that you can do is come see us. Even the demonstrations are quite interesting. You should see it. A lot of chants, songs. It's like a festival. That's why you get hundreds of thousands of people, not because of firebombs.
Yeah, I don't know about some of our listeners. I'm sure some of them, but I've had many, many fun nights in Seoul. Eating Korean barbecue, drinking soju. It's been a lot of fun in different parts of Korea, because you've got a lot of interesting for a country as small as Korea is. There's a lot of interesting things to see. So,
yeah, Adam, with the dollar won rate these days, you can get an extra drink now for the same buck. So, good reason to visit.
It is, and you know, I was in Greece, I don't know, probably 10 years ago or so, when the Greeks were going through a very difficult patch, and I just so happened to be in Athens when Golden Dawn, which was one of the major sort of parties at the time, was rioting. And so we just happened to be walking through one of the, you know, one of these riots and marches. And it was, we just kind of observed it. And it was, like you said, it was pretty interesting. Although I'm not sure they were chanting and singing as much as in Korea. I think they were a little madder. So,
we won't go that way.
Well, thanks for coming on NucleCast and giving us a inside look at what's going on in Korea. I'm sure there's a lot of Americans and our listeners who are, you know, they're reading about what's going on, but they're not certain if what they're reading is accurate and how they should interpret it and understand it. So your discussion today was really informative, and I hope our listeners We'll walk away with a better understanding of what's happening in Korea right now. So
thank you again for the opportunity.
And of course, thanks to General Chun for coming on. And thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us on this episode of NucleCast. Great conversation with General Chun. he really laid out nicely exactly what's going on in South Korea. So I appreciate his willingness. You know, whenever we were talking, it was 4 o'clock in the morning for him. So he was gracious enough to get up very early to talk to us. So, and he did a great job. So hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunthal. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NuclearCast.